This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
We've been searching for that time to get on some sort of a roll here to get that good feeling, and you need a game like this to give you a chance.
We're still struggling to try and score goals night in and night out, but we've been able to do that in the last couple games.
It doesn't get any easier as the season moves on. Pro games get tougher and tougher.
There's not an easy answer to that.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Ezra, Dave, and Drew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
The first shooter for Washington, Matt Hendricks, an 8-goal scorer during the season. Fakes, shoot, scores, went to the backhand, great move. The fake shot, you can see, crumpled. Boucher, once he caved right there, he cannot move to either side. What a sequence there. He had him at hello there.
We're back. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on the home of the Jets, TSN 1290. I'm Ezra Ginsberg with Dave Manuk. Drew is off this week. We're not going to give him that hard of a time, Dave, because he's a new father.
That is true. He has a new child to look after.
Yeah, welcome Samuel to the world. He was born about 2 weeks ago. Shortly after my wedding, actually. So Drew's off this week. He'll be back next week with the two of us as well. We've got Sean Asor here as well. We've got a jam-packed two-hour show today, Dave. The last long weekend of the summer. Can you believe it?
I don't know where the summer has gone. Although we can't complain because this has been the nicest summer in at least my memory. Because it's been phenomenal. No bugs. Great weather. It's been great.
I was going to say, have any of you guys got a mosquito bite this summer?
Not one.
Because I actually have not got a mosquito bite this entire summer.
There have been no bugs. And how many times has it rained? Like maybe 3 or 4 times?
Yeah, like just this past week and that's it?
Yeah, and we'll get into the weather forecast a little bit later with your extended forecast for southern and northern Manitoba. Dave, we have an actually amazing show lined up. Probably the toughest lineup of guests we've ever put together, I think. Coming up in about 25 minutes' time, we're going to be joined by Colt Knorr, who's got a role in Goon Last of the Enforcers, which has already been released in Canada, but it was released yesterday in the U.S. into theaters and on DVD. So Colton from Winnipeg, Manitoba, is going to join us. Plus, we're going to be joined by 3-time Stanley Cup champion and voice of the New Jersey Devils on MSG+. He's the color analyst. Ken Danico is going to join us. And then in the final hour at 10:30, Tyson Nash, Arizona Coyotes color analyst, is going to join us. We're going to talk to Tyson about the career of Shane Doan. That was the big news this week. It's been a little bit quiet as far as the hockey news goes this week, but the big news was that Shane Doan, after 21 years in the NHL, is going to be hanging up his skates. We thought that he might sign one more contract, but you know, the fact that he ended up playing his entire career with one franchise, the Jets Coyotes franchise, I think is pretty impressive in this day and age. You don't see very many players play with one franchise anymore. There's a handful of players in the NHL now today that have played with one franchise. So we're going to talk to Tyson Nash about Shane Doan's career. We're also going to talk about the Coyotes offseason, Dave, because the Coyotes have been very busy, not just on the ice, but off the ice. New coach, Rick Tocchet. You know, there was a bit of an ownership change there as well. So the Coyotes are a very interesting team. I want to start off this morning, though, talking about Matt Hendricks, because we've been off air the last couple of weeks, and you know, I was out at the beach a couple weeks ago, pardon me, last week, and Matt Hendricks, it was announced that he had signed the one-year deal, and it was a bit of a surprise because we thought that the Jets were done. They'd already signed Steve Mason, they'd already signed Dmitry Kulikov. That was in early July, but last weekend, the Jets announced that they'd signed Matt Hendricks to a one-year, $700,000 deal. What were your thoughts, and why do you think the Jets ultimately decided to bring in Matt Hendricks and sign him to that one-year deal?
It's a good question, Ezzy. And, you know, the fan base, of course, as the fan base is usual to do here in Winnipeg, there was a little bit of angst because some thought, you know, why are you signing a 36-year-old player to come in and potentially take a spot from a young player? One of the reasons why Matt Hendricks left Edmonton was because, you know, the young players needed the opportunity to play and get in the game. So if that's the case in Edmonton, why is that not the case here in Winnipeg? Conversely, then there was some talk about the fact that Matt Hendricks is a penalty killing specialist and very good at winning faceoffs, two areas that, of course, the Jets needed help in. But, you know, when you kind of look at the advanced stats, I don't know that it's necessarily the case that that Matt Hendricks would help you on the penalty kill. But, again, like I said, that seems to be the conventional wisdom, is that he was brought in to kind of add that leadership, perhaps make accountability something in the Jets dressing room, which is something that he was talked about having been successful in Edmonton, turning a group that really didn't show a lot of accountability into one that did and was willing to kind of, you know, own up and take ownership over that team. So, the interesting thing to me is you always kind of look at what the previous fan base's thoughts are about a player and whether they're, you know, kind of upset that he's leaving or if they're fine with it. And like one of the headlines in the Edmonton Journal was, new Winnipeg Jets forward Matt Hendricks won't be missed at Edmonton, but won't be forgotten. So they appreciated what he contributed, but they're obviously saying we don't need his services anymore. The question some have, I guess, is that, you know, if you let a guy like Chris Thorburn go, who's kind of your tough guy, and Matt Hendricks is a tougher player, can handle himself in a fight, and if you're losing that element in Chris Thorburn, and the truth is, as you well know, if you look through this roster, who is stepping up and filling that somewhat, I can answer the bell for a Kyle Connor, or, you know, you don't want Blake Wheeler doing it. We know Blake Wheeler is willing to stand in for his teammates, but who's going to kind of be that guy? So that's kind of what I was thinking. Like, you've got a guy who can bring leaderships. I mean, I know people hate when they talk about intangibles, but they're important. There are some important aspects to that, and maybe that's what Matt Hendricks is there. It's not going to be an everyday guy, and will he take a spot from someone who, you know, who you want developing? I don't think so. I really think that they're going to use him, you know, kind of spottingly. But at the same time, if you're in a heavier game against a big team, and you're worried about a younger player kind of getting tossed around, maybe you throw a Hendricks in there.
Dave, here's a clip of Matt Hendricks on Wednesday's afternoon ride show with Huss and Rick. He's talking about the effect that he hopes to have on this young Jets team.
I'm hoping just to come in and do my part. There's some very good leaders there already, but I just hope to add to that what they're doing. I think the biggest thing with young guys nowadays is just it's learning how to play the game consistently every day. And I don't just mean being consistent in your game, because the games are the most important, but you need to be consistent in your practices as well, and your habits, and the way that you're taking care of your body and for preparing for the next day. And that's what I'm really interested in, getting in there and getting to know the guys. So that's going to be a lot of fun. But then, you know, putting a winning product on the ice in Winnipeg.
That's Matt Hendricks from Wednesday's afternoon ride. And Dave, to your point, I mean, we know what Matt Hendricks is. He's a veteran of 10 NHL seasons. As you mentioned, he's a guy that can drop the gloves. He can kill penalties. He can win faceoffs. When I saw that signing, it's exactly what you mentioned. You know, you look at the loss of Chris Thorburn, and to me, he plays almost a hybrid role of what Chris Thorburn and Jim Slater brought several years back, a good penalty killer, a good faceoff guy. And let's be honest, Matt Hendricks could end up being the 13th forward for the NHL Jets. And, you know, I wanted to ask you what impact you think that this signing has for some of the other younger players who are battling for those forward spots, Dave. So you're talking about players like Brandon Tanev. You're talking about players like Nick Petan, Marco Dano. Do you think this changes anything, or do you think that the opportunity for these players is still there?
No, I think it's still there. I think that, you know, it'll be situational. I think if you're going to play, like, let's be realistic, you know, you have Nick Petan and Matt Hendricks. Well, skill-wise, Nick Petan is vastly superior. But at the same time, size-wise, he's not. You know, I mean, Hendricks has what? How much weight on Petan? So if you want a guy who's, you know, able to handle himself, then maybe you put a Hendricks into that position. But, again, a guy like Nick Petan needs to play hockey. You don't want Nick Petan sitting, waiting, and wasting himself. So, I mean, hopefully if Nick Petan is in that situation where you have to wonder whether he's playing or not, he's with the Moose, and he's getting the opportunity to play big minutes with the Manitoba Moose and developing, as opposed to sitting with us in the press box watching from above. But, I mean, a guy like, you know, a Tanev or a Marco Dano, I think it's opportunity. I don't think it's a bad thing when you have players in training camp battling it out and trying, you know, having to try and fight for a role. I mean, let's be realistic. Maybe Matt Hendricks is playing in the AHL. You know, I mean, it's not an onerous contract at $700,000. So if you have to put him in the AHL and then call him up occasionally, fine. So then that's what you've done, and you've got a veteran who can, you know, have leadership in the AHL as well as bringing it to the NHL if they need it. And again, situationally, letting him play. But, you know, there's clearly an opportunity for a forward who wants to take it. you know, whether that's a Marco Dano, whether that's a Nick Batan. Again, Nick Batan seems to be this great big question mark in this, in, to me at least, in this organization, because I think for him to be successful, he has to play with, you know, more successful play, teammates who are going to put him into that position where he's going to be scoring and or setting up goals.
Batan has to play with skilled players.
That's
because
right.
He's a skilled player. I mean, we know that he scored 100 points back-to-back with the Portland Winterhawks in the Western Hockey League, and we know that Nick Batan ideally is not on your third line or on your fourth line. Maybe if your third line needs some a scoring punch, but he's not a defensive forward. Nick Batan's a guy that you want out there on the power play, playing the half board. So I think you make a lot of good points, Dave. And, you know, I think the Jets need some veteran experience in their bottom six or their bottom three, if you want to call it that. Because when you look at the third line, what the third line was last year, it was Adam Lowry, Joel Armia, Sean Mathias, and then you had Andrew Kopp up on the third line at times. You had Andrew Kopp up on the top two lines at times, but even on the fourth line there, I mean, you're talking about Andrew Kopp, you're talking about, well, potentially now Kyle Connor. He's obviously not going to be on the fourth line, but we're talking about some of the younger players that are up and down the lineup right now. So I looked at this signing, and it's exactly what you said again, Dave. You need some toughness on this roster. And for everyone who says that, you know, toughness isn't an important part of the game anymore, well, why did the Pittsburgh Penguins acquire Ryan Reeves then? Defending Stanley Cup champions, they go out and they get a guy who is an enforcer. Obviously, Ryan Reeves can play hockey as well, but they want someone to protect Sid and Evgeny, right? And so Matt Hendricks needs to be there, and I think it's a good signing. And I realize there were a lot of people on Twitter that were going nuts and saying that, you know, Matt Hendricks, the signing is going to take away from Marco Dano or Nick Batan or maybe even Kyle Connor. But the reality is, he doesn't play that same role. And before the Jets signed Matt Hendricks, there were question marks about whether Nick Batan or Brandon Tanev were going to make the Jets. And the fact is, these are young players. I mean, Tanev's a little bit older at 25 years old, but last year was his first year in the NHL, Dave. But when you're talking about Nick Batan, this is a player who's in his early 20s, right? He was drafted back in 2013. So if he spends another year with the Manitoba Moose, that's not a bad thing. That doesn't mean that Nick Batan still can't have a career in the NHL. So as far as I'm concerned, this is a good signing. And at the end of the day, guys, this was a one-year deal, and he signed for close to the league minimum. So, I mean, this is definitely a move for this year and a team that wants to get back into the playoffs.
Yeah, and for one thing that stands out with me about the signing is that you look entering training camp, and we've heard this constantly from the Jets organization that they want as much competition as they can get in their training camp, right? It's good for these young players to come in and feel that their jobs are on the line and feel that they got to push themselves. And you look at a guy like Matt Hendricks, and we've had countless people on from Edmonton and around the league just talking about what he brings to the show, to the team, and you know, his intangibles, and, you know, the majority of them are saying, you know, maybe this is a push, or we expected his last year to maybe be last year or the last season. But there's one thing you can count on a guy with Matt Hendricks. He's going to come into training camp. He's going to work his butt off, regardless if he cracks the top 12 or if he pushes someone out of a roster spot. That guy's going to come in, and he is going to set the tone for how hard you need to work to play in the NHL. And that's a great thing for your young players to see, is a guy who may be a little bit past his prime, maybe over the top of his career, but he's coming in, and he's going to push, and he's going to grind, and he's going to make these young guys work to earn their spot on the roster. I think it's a great, great thing to have entering into training camp.
Yeah, you make some good points, Sean, and when you talk about, you know, his role, and the Jets have enough players that can put the puck in the net. There were only six teams in the NHL that scored more goals than the Jets last year, and I expect that to be similar this year. I don't think anybody in this room doesn't think that the Jets are a top 10 offensive team in the league, especially when you consider guys like Patrick Laine and Nikolaj Ehlers are going to be a year older, and then you throw in a guy like Kyle Connor, who we expect to make the jump, and then the offense from the defense should be better with a healthy Tyler Myers and Dmitry Kulikov being added to the roster. So it's a good signing. And, you know, the Jets need that leadership. They need that character. And even those things don't show up, although those things don't show up necessarily on the team Corsi stats, I think it still does matter for a team that's trying to get back into the playoffs. Speaking of Tyler Myers, Dave.
Yes.
When we come back next segment, we're going to talk about Tyler Myers, because I don't think he's being talked about enough this offseason. A lot of the focus has been on the additions the Jets have made via free agency, Steve Mason, Dmitry Kulikov, now Matt Hendricks. But for me, a big key to the Jets' fortunes next year is going to be a healthy Tyler Myers. So we're going to take a break right now, and when we come back, we're going to talk about Tyler Myers and how important a healthy Myers is going to be for the Jets next year. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on the home of the Jets, TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
In on him, around for Ben, tied up, Myers scores! Tyler Myers, 15 seconds into this one, and the Jets have a 1-0 lead.
That was Tyler Myers scoring the go-ahead goal back in October of last year versus the Dallas Stars. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. I'm Ezra Ginsberg, alongside Dave Minuk and Sean Assor. Drew Mandel is off this week. This segment of the show is brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. I wonder if Keener's got any Matt Hendricks requests yet.
Well, that's a good question. I do not know.
Do we know what number he's going to wear?
No, hasn't been announced.
Okay. You can't order a jersey without the number.
That's a good point.
I mean, that would be weird just to get Hendricks on the back of your Jets jersey with no number, right?
Unless you're waiting, you know, and then you have like a two to be, you get one of those to be determined.
TBD.
Yeah, TBD lettering.
You know, we talk about this every year, but, you know, there are some weird Jets jerseys out there. Every year you seem to see jersey fouls out there. And, you know, I'm of the belief that putting your own name on the back of your jersey is cool. Some people don't like it. But especially when you have a new player, you got to find out what number he's wearing, right? Dave, I want to talk about...
The one thing is, I think he'll have to ask Alexei Ponikarovsky, because I think he's going to be... I think Hendricks wears 23. And I think Ponikarovsky was the last Jets player to wear 23.
But Dave, they retired his number, though.
Oh, good point.
So Hendricks isn't going to be able to wear that.
Didn't
because,
see it hanging from the rafters?
Yeah, I mean, didn't you remember that ceremony they had last year? Okay, guys, this segment is all about Tyler Myers. We had an article up on illegalcurve.com a couple of days ago about Tyler Myers. It was in the Kelowna Daily Courier. Of course, Tyler Myers played for the Kelowna Rockets in the Western Hockey League, and he spends his offseason in Kelowna, Dave. And, you know, I got to thinking about Tyler Myers, and we know that last year was a very difficult year for Tyler Myers, both on and off the ice, with his wife and obviously child, what was going on there, but more so, I mean, his injury problems. He was only able to play 11 games last year, and when you look at the impact Tyler Myers had on the Winnipeg Jets defense when he came over from Buffalo and how much the Jets struggled defensively last year, the Jets were bottom five in the league goals against. We know that. They were bottom five in the league in the penalty kill as well. When you look at this Jets defense, is it safe to say, Dave, that it really all revolves around Tyler Myers because of the minutes he plays?
I think that there's – this Jets defense is as deep as it's ever been now. I mean, and that's the key. And you know, we saw last year when they had to go to the well and keep going to the well and keep going to the well that, you know, of course, eventually it's going to run dry. But when you have, you know, Trouba, Morrissey, Bufflin, Kulikov, Myers, and Enstrom – that's as deep. When Tobias Enstrom, who, again, is not as effective as he used to be, but is still, if you can have Enstrom and Myers potentially as your third pairing, and trust me, the biggest challenge, I think, isn't going to be this defense. It's to this defense, of course, sorry, is going to be massaging the egos and getting them all enough ice time to play, because these are all guys who want to play big minutes. These are all elite defensemen. And you've got a guy like Trouba who wants to play half a game. You want Bufflin who wants to play half a game. So if you're, you know, the coaching staff, you have to figure out a way, I think, to get everybody enough ice time to make them effective. But if you can have Tyler Myers healthy, I mean, he hasn't played since, I think, November of 2016. And so you've got Tyler Myers who hasn't played in months and months and months. He's recovered. I mean, we've had two seasons now of Tyler Myers being less than optimally healthy. If you can actually have him for a season playing the way he can play, I mean, think about how much better this Jets team is from you. What you talked about, Ezzy, and what everybody who sits in this market and talks about, and, you know, whether they're fans or media or even the team itself, everybody knows it's the goals that are getting in, and it's the penalties. Tyler Myers can help you, you know, for sure with preventing goals. So, I mean, if you can get Tyler Myers, especially, like I said, if you have Tyler Myers playing on your third pairing, how much depth does that show that your team has on its team when Tyler Myers is playing third pair. So I think if he's healthy for the whole season, first of all, if he's healthy the whole season, that's a testament to the, you know, hopefully for the rest of the team. And then if that's the case, I think the Jets are a playoff team, because with this defensive group, with Connor Hellebuck having really kind of, I think, you know, spent some serious time this summer off season training out in BC. You got Steve Mason coming in. I really think with a healthy D core, with that nucleus, and again, I agree with you, Ezzy. I think Tyler Myers is key, because once you start to have to fit in pieces, I'm not saying that these guys aren't able to do that, but Tyler Myers at least will be able to fill more than one role. He's not just kind of a plug and play. He's a guy who has some, he can be dynamic.
And Myers can play 25, 26, 27 minutes a game. He did that with the Jets a couple of years ago, and he did that when he played for the Buffalo Sabres. And Dave, what's most important right now is that Tyler Myers is healthy now. And we don't know if Tyler Myers is going to play all 82 games, but when you missed the majority of last season, right? We talked about it. He only played 11 games last year. So when you miss that much hockey and you're healthy now after you had surgery last year, that's what's most important right now. And when you look at the domino effect that'll have on some of the other defensemen, I mean, I think we'd all agree that Dustin Byfuglien at times played too much last year, right? So when you have a guy, and again, Tyler Myers doesn't necessarily have to play 26 or 27 minutes to be effective, but you see other teams around the NHL, guys, who use defensemen more equally than other teams, right? So sure, you have a team like Minnesota who uses Ryan Suter 28, 29, 30 minutes a game, but then you have other teams who don't really use defensemen more than 23, 24 minutes a night, right? So for me, Tyler Myers is very important to this Jets D-core, because as you said, regardless of if Tyler Myers is on the second pair, first pair, third pair, it looks like most likely he's going to be on the second pair or the third pair, and that's just because Jacob Trouba is the Jets' top defenseman. I mean, nobody is going to argue that Jacob Trouba has earned that role, and that's another player who I think Myers can take minutes away from, right? And if you're able to even take off 2 or 3 minutes a game, I mean, that makes the defenseman more effective. And the top defensemen in the league, guys, they want to play a lot, right? So Jacob Trouba will tell you, I'll play 35 minutes a game if you need me to, but we know that that's probably not the most effective. Charlie Huddy would probably agree with that, right? You probably want your D minutes between 20 and 24 minutes, ideally, in a regular game, right? Obviously, it depends if it goes to overtime or you're talking about a situation where you've got some injuries, right? So you might have to lean on your top defenseman more. But I think Tyler Myers is one of the most important players to this team, and I think he would acknowledge that himself. And some of the other players on the team, the leaders of this team, like Blake Wheeler and Dustin Byfuglien and Mark Scheifele, will tell you how important it's going to be to have a healthy Tyler Myers. And it's especially because the Jets are struggling so much defensively last year and on the penalty kill. Tyler Myers, you can say whatever you want about Tyler Myers, but he's a heck of a defenseman who can move the puck very well.
Yeah, you look at the depth of the Jets defense now, and it's actually quite astounding to what we're used to looking at. When you know, Mark Stewart, no, you know, nothing against Ben Chiarot, but when you got Tyler Myers in instead of Ben Chiarot or Mark Stewart, that is a significant improvement on your blue line. And you touched on it, Ezzy, when you're looking at 32-33 minute buff as opposed to 27 to 29 minute buff, those 4 or 5 minutes make such a big difference at the way he plays and the tone he sets from the back end, and just, you know, from back checking to D zone coverage to mental errors. I mean, it just seems to kind of push him over the edge when he's pushed past that 33, 34, 5 minute marker. And a guy like Tyler Myers can really alleviate some physical and mental stress off of the defense core. As well, he's quite a good playmaker out of the Jets' own zone, pardon me. He's a really competent puck mover, excellent skater, great reach. He adds a little bit of stability to the back end. There's less scrambliness, is that even a word, when, you know, you're dealing with a Chiarot or a Stewart compared to him. You know, he's been there before. He's a little bit more sound defensively. He's worked with Enstrom before. I like that pairing. And also, one thing that's really underrated about him, in my opinion, he gets pucks on net when he's in the offensive zone. He's got that quick wrister. He can get a quick slap shot off really fast. It doesn't take him very long to get the puck to the net from the blue line, which is critical when, A, you keep the puck in. That goal that we played the clip of exemplifies it perfectly. Puck gets to him perfectly along the wall. Quick wind up on net. Boom. Goal. As opposed to the slow wind up or the missing of the net, which causes the scramble. it's imperative that he's back in the lineup and healthy again.
And Sean, I just think at times Tyler Myers' importance is understated. And you just mentioned, you know, his big shot from the point. You know, most likely he's not going to play on the first power play because you have other players on this Jets team that'll go out there, but he can definitely be put out there on the second power play. He had 9 goals and 27 points a couple of years ago. I mean, this isn't a guy that's going to score 50 points like he did in his first year, or I think he actually had 48 points in his first year, Dave, but he is a guy who can contribute offensively. He's really a guy who can contribute in all areas of the game, power play, penalty kill, even strength. I mean, you forget that a couple of years ago, when Jacob Trouba was struggling, because, you know, we forget that Jacob Trouba did struggle a little bit, you know, in his contract year, Tyler Myers was the best defenseman for the Jets. I don't care what anybody says. I mean, Jacob Trouba obviously is the best defenseman on the Jets now, but I think he is that steadying influence, and, you know, the health factor is huge, obviously, but I think even if Tyler Myers is able to play 80-85% of the season, Dave, that's going to be key for this team, because we know that they just have to be better defensively. The scoring goals is not going to be an issue, and we're going to talk about this ad nauseum probably for the coming weeks, you know, going into training camp in the early part of the season. But Tyler Myers is still one of your better defenders, so hopefully he's able to be healthy for the majority of the season.
I think what it comes down to is what he allows the team's coaching staff to do, and I think he allows them to distribute the minutes more evenly, and as a result, you're more likely to have a team that long-term, because remember, I mean, the NHL season's a grind and it wears guys down, and you have to have a healthy core going into the playoffs if you want to be a playoff team. So maybe perhaps a, you know, this allows guys like Trouba and Byfuglien to be a little bit healthier, feeling a little bit better, you know, as they finish the season. And as a result, you have that kind of verve to get in, because we know it's going to be really tough in the Central. So maybe this will be the thing that the Jets are needing to really get them past that mark.
Dave, we're going to head to break now. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Colt Knorr. We're going to talk Goon, Last of the Enforcers. We're going to talk fighting in hockey. We're going to talk about a lot of things. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on the home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Folks, Colt Knorr of the Maple Leafs, you pretty well figured that, did you not? It's a best of three. They've went at it in every game, pretty much. Counts Kartner for Ottawa. Oh, and Flatner with a right hand. A punch straight on to Kartner, and he's still wobbly, trying to get back up. Colt Knorr. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk, Sean Assor. Let's hit the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline. From Winnipeg, Manitoba, we are happy to be joined by Colt Knorr from Goon, Last of the Enforcers, now available in the U.S., select theaters and video on demand. Colton, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, Colton. We were playing that clip. That was. Do you remember that fight between yourself and Matt Karkner? I think that was from 2010.
Yeah, well, I was just reliving it this summer because I was at a golf tournament just recently on Long Island, and Karkner was there, and we were just having some fun going back and forth through all our fights that we had, and I think there was the one where I held up three fingers, but my hand was so sore, and you couldn't really tell I was holding up three fingers. It was just, it was a fun time, because after you fight a guy, you're just able to go and kind of hang out and talk with them, and so we had a good time just kind of going back and reliving some of those fights.
So, Colton, as I just mentioned, Goon, Last of the Enforcers came out in theaters in the U.S. yesterday. We wanted to start off by asking you, how did you get involved in the movie?
It just came about. Jay Baruchel just reached out to me and asked if I wanted to be a part of it. And I enjoyed the first one so much that I couldn't refuse. And I was happy to just kind of be on there in whatever way it was gonna be on film. It was just fun to be part of it and kind of be on set with all these guys. It was just it's kind of in shock just actually kind of going through that and doing these fight scenes together.
Colton, what's it like having a Hockey DB site showing off your hockey stats, and now I'm assuming an IMDb page showing off your acting chops? And what was it like changing your role onto the silver screen?
Yeah, it's a lot easier to fight for real I had trouble kind of holding back my punches. There's a good scene on there, and we just asked if we could fight for real, because it might look more real than us trying to pretend fight on screen. But it was fun. I had a couple lines we kind of had to go over, and it was just it was definitely different than what I was used to, for sure.
Colton, what was it like to work with Jay Baruchel, who's the director, and some of those other actors, including Sean William Scott, who we obviously know as Stifler from American Pie and many other movies, and then Liv Schreiber was also in that movie. What was it like to be around, big name actors like that?
Well, yeah, they made us feel so comfortable on screen. It was nice because we were playing kind of our role in what we did. And so they were kind of asking us a little bit about, how would we do this, and a little bit of input. But they were just so good at making us feel comfortable and welcome and being part of the film. Like Jay's, it's his director debut, and I think the film was just great, and he did an amazing job on this film.
So what would you say was the best part, most memorable aspect of the filming?
Well, it's just funny because you got me and Perils kind of going at it. And, so it's fun for people who have seen us fight how many times over the years and everything we've gone through to kind of be on screen together after all that. And, we've got to know each other well from being on set all the time for long days. So, and we got to kind of put everything in the past, and now we're pretty close, good buddies.
So, Colton, are you more of a method actor, or are you more of a classical actor?
No, I stuck with the method acting. I think I'm still in character. I think it's I've lived that my whole life, so it was pretty easy to kind of jump on screen and do it as well.
You just mentioned George Peros is in the movie. I haven't seen Goon: Last of the Enforcers yet. I'm definitely going to be watching it. I saw the first one, but you fought him in the NHL. Did that bring back some memories of you guys fighting in the NHL when you guys were filming the movie?
Well, of course. Like I said, there's some things that happened that are pretty scary moments for both of us. And we talked about it a little bit, and, I just wanted to make sure a guy was all right and he never too hurt. And so we kind of put that behind us, and we were kind of just able to enjoy the film and being part of it. We didn't kind of dwell on it too much because until, we both have respect for what we did in the game and how hard of a job it was. So we kind of knew, let's just put that behind us and let's just enjoy this.
We're joined by Winnipeg's Colton Orr live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline. Colton's in Goon: Last of the Enforcers, obviously also played for the Boston Bruins, Toronto Maple Leafs, and New York Rangers. Colton, I wanted to ask you about the role that fighting plays in today's NHL. What do you think of the role that it plays? Because we know that enforcers like yourself, I mean, they are dying out of the game.
Yeah, it's a bit different now. You're going to have guys that play a little bit more. You can maybe ask a little bit more of them. You're not going to have a lot of the stage fights. There's still a role for toughness in the game. You want to have someone that's able to go out there and finish their checks and kind of stir the pot, if you will, because that can throw the other guys off the game. So you're going to have someone that's going to want to make sure that they're not doing that. So you're always going to need someone that's able to kind of look after your stars. You look at Pittsburgh, and they bring in Ryan Reeves because they're tired of having Crosby get pushed around, and Malkin and Kessel. They're not going to have it. So if it's an indicator of how things are going to go, you're going to still see teams employing someone that has some sort of toughness to look after your superstars. You have it in Toronto with Martin, and teams only still have somebody that's able to kind of do that role.
Colton, I'm going back to Goon because, I believe Doug the Thug Smith was involved in this movie in some capacity. I believe it was loosely based on his life or something like that. And I believe, if my research is right, you did work with him in Providence. So what was it like getting an opportunity to work with Doug the Thug, and how cool is that nickname?
Well, he's got the best, Doug the Thug. You can't beat that for an enforcer nickname for sure in hockey. And that goes way back to Providence in my first year, and he was a fighting coach. They literally employed him to come work with guys like me and some other guys that were there on fighting. He used to do crazy things like hang heavy bags from the rafters, and we'd be on the ice punching heavy bags and sparring and hitting pads. So it was a whole different aspect of things you never thought you would do, but it worked. It was fun to give you some confidence on fighting. And I think it was good just to protect yourself, even if you weren't a fighter per se, that you could, you know, you could go out and learn how to just take care of yourself just in case it did come about.
And was he involved in this movie as well?
He was. So he was actually in one of the scenes as well, and he was on set. So to see him again and to kind of work with him in a different, you know, different setting was kind of fun. And just to be able to, you know, like you said, it's loosely based on his life. So it was fun to have him to be part of the film.
We're joined by Colton Orr on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Colton, hopefully I'm not putting you on the spot here. You mentioned Ryan Reeves earlier. We're very familiar with Ryan Reeves, obviously being from Manitoba. Aside from Ryan Reeves, who's one of your maybe favorite enforcers in today's NHL?
That's tough. I guess you can't really say there's any real enforcers left. I wouldn't think like anyone I could say. Like you look at Martin, I think in Toronto, he does a good job of what he does, and I like the way he plays the game. Other than that, you know, there's not really too many guys out there that are going to be doing that role. You got guys like Cassian and Edmonton. Like Edmonton's kind of built pretty tough overall. Like Lushik, I think, is still one of the scariest guys in the game. He's tough and can play. I think that's the new mold that you're going to see in the game.
So, Colton, as you transition to life off the ice, I believe you were doing some work last season with SNY covering the Rangers broadcast. What is your plan for this upcoming season? Will you be doing more of that? And what's it like working now on the other side of the mic and being in the media?
Yes, I joined SNY last year for the kind of the home stretch of the season and playoff run for that the Rangers had last year. And it was a great great experience for me and a great way to look at the game and kind of break things down and be able to just, you know, stay involved in hockey and continue to get on TV and talk about something that I've done for my whole life and really enjoyed. So I'm excited about it. I'll be back on SNY starting again this season and kind of covering some New York hockey and NHL hockey, which is, you know, like I said, it's just really exciting to still be part of the game and be able to get to the games. And you know, I'm a fan still. I love playing. I love being part of it. And so I'm really looking forward to the upcoming season.
And Colt, you're a busy guy too, because you've also got involved in youth coaching. You're in New Hampshire right now. You've also got two young kids at home. How are you enjoying coaching youth hockey and how are you enjoying being a father as well?
Well, you know, being a father has been great. My daughter's five, and she's starting the Learn to Play Junior Rangers program this year, which is absolutely amazing. That, you know, it's going to be fun that she's going to be part of it. She's got all her Ranger gear, which is kind of, it's so cool to see my daughter, like, in Ranger gear. And then my son just turned one, and he's, you know, he's up and coming. He's going to kind of learn the ropes and from his sister. And so it's been good, you know, like, we've been able to kind of enjoy the family a lot together, you know, being retired now. And then I also, like you said, I took on some youth hockey. I'm doing U15 with the Mid-Fairfield Junior Rangers. And it's been great. I got my first win yesterday. We won 6-0 to the Nashville Junior Predators.
Congratulations.
So it's fun. You know, I get to be able to teach kids and kind of pass along the things that I learned in my career and be able to develop young hockey players, and hopefully I can have, you know, some impact in their career and kind of guide them in the right direction and help develop what they need to, you know, go on to prep school or college or whatever it takes to kind of help them out in this time in their career.
So, Colton, at what age do you teach your youngster, you know, some of dad's tricks, you know, how to jersey the opposing player, stuff like that?
Well, my daughter... favorite thing to do is take her stick and just whack me, you know, and say, oh, she'll go, oh, penalty slashing and go to the penalty box. So she's already got that part down. I'm going to try and stay away from teaching her to drop the gloves, hopefully, but she's pretty feisty. And, you know, my son, we'll see what happens when he sees maybe some of my old highlights when he gets older.
Well, I'm just happy that we had an opportunity to talk to Colton Orr, who, as you guys may not know, is a fellow North Ender like myself and former Garden City alumni, also like myself, and Shawnee Oswer.
I love growing up in Garden City. It's, you know, I always tell everyone, I'm a North End Winnipeg boy, and just growing up on the outdoor rinks in Winnipeg, and you know, you don't get that anywhere else. The shinny hockey that we got to play as kids. Like, even when I came back with the Leafs, I went out and played with my nephews in between games, because what I love to do is just fun getting out there and just kind of being with my nephews and playing shinny hockey. You can't beat that in Winnipeg.
No, the Garden City Rink, nothing finer outside there. One more for you, Colton, before I let you go here. You've been in the NHL, and now you've made your major motion picture debut. Just got to ask you, who's more annoying to deal with, a head coach of a hockey team or a director of a major motion film?
Oh, that's a tough one. I can't say Jay was tough to deal with. He was pretty easy on us, and so he made that experience pretty well. And I guess it depends for a head coach whether they're, you know, if you're playing bad or not, or you know, making toe drags at the blue line. I think that would I think they'd be a little tougher on you.
Goon, Last of the Enforcers is in theaters now in the U.S. It's also available on Blu-ray in Canada. Colton, thanks so much for joining us this morning, and hopefully we can catch up with you again during the regular season.
Oh, yeah, please do. And thanks for having me on, guys, and have a good weekend.
Thanks so much. We're going to head to break now. When we come back, we're going to talk about David Pastrnak. He's still without a contract. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on the home of the Jets, TSN 1290. Boys, big thanks to Colton Orr for joining the show. That was a great interview. If you missed it, you're going to be able to download the show after the show on iTunes. Dave, I want to talk about David Pastrnak right now. We just played a clip of a goal he scored last year. He's coming off an excellent season for the Boston Bruins, scored 34 goals, added 36 assists for 70 points. He's still without a contract, and late yesterday, Alex Wenberg signed a long-term contract with the Columbus Blue Jackets. And, you know, you wonder if now that Alex Wenberg is signed, if David Pastrnak is going to sign. And, you know, we're only a couple of weeks, actually less than a couple of weeks away from training camp. And David Pastrnak is a big part of that Bruins team right now, and he's without a contract. And, you know, it was reported in the Boston Herald earlier this week that David Pastrnak and his agent had turned down a 6-year, $36 million deal. And Dave, before I ask you what you think David Pastrnak is going to get, and if you think he's going to sign, because I do think he is going to sign within the next week, I want to go over some of the comparables for David Pastrnak. And keep in mind also that the Boston Bruins have $10 million in cap space. I should also mention that this segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. So I put together a little comparable sheet here for David Pastrnak, and for me, the best comparables were Philip Forsberg and Mikhail Granlund. And, you know, some writers have suggested that David Pastrnak is looking for Leon Draisaitl money. And for me, Leon Draisaitl is in a different league. And I think the Oilers, you could argue, overpaid for Leon Draisaitl. He's getting $8.5 million. And I realized that he had 77 points during the regular season, and then he added another 16 points in two rounds for the Oilers, Dave. But for me, Leon Draisaitl getting $8.5 million is a lot for a guy who's only had two full years in the NHL. So when you talk about the comparables, you're talking about Philip Forsberg and Mikhail Granlund. Philip Forsberg makes $6 million a year, and I believe Mikhail Granlund is making $5 million a year. So when you're looking at David Pastrnak, he's played 3 years in the NHL now. He had 70 points last year. And you also have to keep in mind, Brad Marchand will make $6.125 million under his new deal, which kicks in next year. And Patrice Bergeron will make $6.87 million next year. So how do you pay David Pastrnak much more than $6 million a year, Dave? And do you think a bridge deal is possible here?
Potentially. I mean, if you listen to what both sides are saying, and, you know, talks resumed, I believe, yesterday between the two sides. Pastrnak's agent is J.P. Barrie, and he was apparently traveling, according to the reports in the Boston media. So they didn't have a talk before yesterday. But from his side of the camp, they're talking, they want a max deal. They're going for the max, I believe is what he said. And so he said, we plan to discuss an eight-year maximum term to see if we can find more common ground, which obviously means they're trying to expand so they can get that money that they want, but also, you know, the Bruins would have that term. You know, you've got a player who came off an excellent season. I believe he was only behind Brad Marchand in terms of goals for the Bruins. So he's a player that you clearly need. I mean, you know, no team is going to turn up their nose at scoring, but at the same time, you can't handcuff your team to really just one player unless, I mean, obviously we're talking about Connor McDavid, but, you know, Pastrnak is very serviceable. You're going to need him in that lineup. You don't want it like a Jacob Trouba situation where the player misses, you know, a significant amount of time and takes a while to kind of get back into mode and sure they're still training, but it's just not the same as playing the preseason and playing in all those early regular season games. And it just throws your team off kilter. So neither side really is going to want to see this go long. But again, it has to be a deal. Cam Neely is talking about how it has to be a deal that fits what the Bruins have available. So, you know, in the end, Ezzie, if they have to, perhaps we do see something on a smaller term that says, sure, you know, but again, if you're a team like the Bruins, wouldn't you rather lock him up long term because he's shown that he's a proven commodity?
I should just clarify as well, Dave. Mikael Granlund, his AAV is $5.75 million a year, okay, but he signed a 3-year deal. Alex Wenberg signed a 6-year deal, as we mentioned previously. He's going to make an AAV of $4.9 million. So, and you make some good points about David Pastrnak, Dave, because I think absolutely the Boston Bruins have to lock him up here. And there might be a possibility of a bridge deal here, but I think when we already know that the Bruins, Cam Neely, Don Sweeney, they've already offered David Pastrnak a 6-year deal, I don't see a 2-year or 3-year deal happening here. And, you know, David Pastrnak's a guy that I think at times is underappreciated. I mean, he's a very dynamic player, and he was drafted in 2014. And, you know, I wanted to also ask you, Dave, about the impact that you think this could possibly have on Nikolaj Ehlers, because when you're talking about Mikael Granlund and you're talking about Alex Wenberg, David Pastrnak, these guys were drafted in either 2013, 2014, and these are all dynamic offensive players. So Nikolaj Ehlers, we know he's entering the final year of his entry-level deal. So when you're looking at what David Pastrnak and Alex Wenberg are getting here, $4.9 million, Pastrnak's obviously going to get more than that. He's probably going to get in the neighborhood of $6.5 million a year. Is that what we can expect for Nikolaj Ehlers, do you think?
You know what? It doesn't seem unreasonable. I mean, think about it. Nikolaj Ehlers in 82 games last year had 64 points. He had 25 goals and 39 assists. I mean, we're talking, you know, a few points shy of a player now we're discussing in the term when you're talking about with David Pastrnak. So, you know, me personally, I think Ehlers is one of those players that, you know, this year is going to be critical for him. But, I mean, obviously, he's going to be looking for big money in long term. And the Jets, you know, when you have a player of Ehlers' caliber, you're going to want to lock him up for that long term. But there's going to be a lot of cap management they're going to have to do because you have a number of players, i.e. Jacob Trouba, i.e. Josh Morrissey, i.e. Patrick Laine, that you also need to kind of lock down into those types of contracts. So there's definitely going to be some, you know, maneuvering that Kevin Cheveldayoff and company and Larry Simmons and the, you know, the cap management side of things is going to have to look at when you're signing a player or talking about signing a player like Nikolaj Ehlers. But Ezzie, I think you're 100% right. I think like it's a completely reasonable comparable when you have a player of, you know, similar sort of both very dynamic players who add a lot to their teams, add a lot of scoring, and bring a lot of punch to the table. So, yeah, I think it's a very fair comparable, and I think Jets fans are reasonable to be watching what Pastrnak signs for in Boston, of course, assuming he does sign for something in Boston, and potentially as a comparable for Nikolaj Ehlers.
Yeah, like I mentioned earlier, guys, I think David Pastrnak is going to sign. I don't think this is going to really trickle in to training camp in the regular season. Maybe, you know, he signs a contract after next week, but especially with Alex Wenberg now signed, you know, he is kind of in that ballpark as far as what David Pastrnak can expect, even though Wenberg As we said, he's going to be making $4.9 million, whereas Pasternak looks like he's looking for $6.5, $7 million a year. But I think it's significant, guys, because when you look at the rest of the NHL right now and the remaining unsigned RFAs, we'll talk to Ken Danico about Damon Severson because he's still an unsigned RFA, but the big names left. David Pasternak is really at the top of that list. You've got Bo Horvat, who was drafted ninth overall in 2013. He's still looking at, for a contract from the Vancouver Canucks. Sam Bennett, drafted fourth overall back in 2014. He's without a contract. He had a bad year last year for the Calgary Flames, but he's obviously going to get a deal coming up here shortly. Anthony Duclair, another guy who's without a contract. He was drafted in the second round back in 2013 by the New York Rangers, then obviously traded to the Arizona Coyotes. But really, Pasternak is the big name out there, and I don't think he gets the headlines that some other players get, but especially if you owned him in a fantasy pool last year, you know how good Pasternak really was. And this Boston Bruins team, they can score goals. That's not the problem. It's really defensively, especially if Tuukka Rask struggles at all, that defense is definitely not what it was back in 2011 when they won the Stanley Cup. So for me, Pasternak will get signed, and he's a big part of the future because the core of this team, we know it's Patrice Bergeron, we know it's Brad Marchand, they brought in David Backes, but David Backes, guys, let's be honest, at this point in his career, he's more suited to be a third-line center, so he's not a primary scorer for the Boston Bruins, but it's interesting to see because when you look at Leon Draisaitl, we thought Draisaitl was going to sign when Connor McDavid signed, and he didn't, right? And many people thought Draisaitl was going to be in that $7 to $7.5 million range, and now you see Draisaitl sign for $8.5 million, so I think when David Pasternak's agent looks at that deal, he's saying, well, you know, I think my guy who got 70 points, only 7 points less than Draisaitl, he can probably say, well, no, I think, you know, maybe he deserves an AAV of $7 million a year. But again, that's why the general managers and the agents get paid the big bucks, Dave. They come to that magic number. So, you know, we're a little bit surprised Pasternak hasn't signed yet. But when you look around the league, we talked about it. Horvat, Bennett, I mean, these are top 10 picks from 2013 and 2014. Negotiations sometimes are a little tricky.
Yeah, and the one good thing for the Bruins, at least, is that I believe they have about $10 million or so in cap space right now for next season. So they have the room to sign him to whatever they're going to want to do because obviously he's not making more than that. And I believe, you know, to your point, as like it's just what Cam Neely, I think Cam Neely was referenced, asked about the Draisaitl deal, and he basically said, is one player going to shift the entire market? Is one player like Leon Draisaitl going to be able to take a market which was here and move it over here because he signed that deal? And the reality is, you know, probably not, simply because you have to factor in Connor McDavid. Does Leon Draisaitl get that contract? Does he make those types of points? Is he that type of player without a Connor McDavid there? You know, if you throw in somebody else from that draft year, would he be that type of player?
And Dave, and by the way, Dave, don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm a huge Leon Draisaitl fan.
Yeah, I'm not maligning him.
And he's an excellent hockey player. But when you look at, you know, after 2 full years in the NHL, you're already getting $8.5 million. So you're already a top 10 paid guy or top 15 paid guy in the NHL. Now, I'm just a little bit surprised. I thought he'd be more in the $7 million range. And, you know, I'm not as much of a cap expert as others. But I think that has had an impact on David Pasternak. I just thought it was interesting that, you know, David Pasternak hasn't signed yet. And you look at that contract offer by the Boston Bruins, 6 years, $36 million, looks a lot like Mikael Granlund, who, by the way, is 3 years older than David Pasternak, 3 or 4 years older. He was drafted, I believe, back in 2010 or 2011, if I'm not mistaken. So Mikael Granlund got $6 million a year, and when you're talking about David Pasternak, he's only played, you know, the 2 full years in the NHL now. So, but again, I mean, when you put up that type of season, 34 goals, 70 points, you can ask for the big bucks, I guess.
Well, I was going to say, speaking of big bucks or not big bucks, relatively speaking, how good does that Mark Scheifele contract look at 6.125? Considering he had 82 points last season.
Well, it's a great deal.
You know, I mean, just and it's, you know, it's, what is it, like 6 more years of that contract?
So, I think, I mean, you could argue that Mark Scheifele should be making as much as Leon Draisaitl.
Absolutely. No question.
At the very least, you could argue that he should be making $7.5 million when you compare him to other players in the league, right? Because Mark Scheifele, we know, is a number one center in the NHL now. Nobody's going to argue that. You could even argue he's a top 20 center in the NHL. Certainly the numbers he put up last year. Guys, we're going to head to break now. When we come back, we're going to be joined by three-time Stanley Cup champion and New Jersey Devils color analyst Kenny Danico. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on the home of the Jets, TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
We're back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. I'm Ezra Ginsberg, joined by Dave Manouk and Sean Asor. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. For more information about Linden Market Dental Center, visit lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Guys, we've got Ken Danico coming up shortly here. I want to talk about Shane Doan, guys, because that was the biggest news of the week. Shane Doan announcing his retirement. It wasn't a big surprise, Dave. We knew that maybe Shane Doan was going to sign a one-year deal, but most likely when it was evident that he was not going to be returning to the Arizona Coyotes, that there was a good chance that Shane Doan was going to hang up his skates. We've got Tyson Nash coming up at 10:30 to talk about Shane Doan's career. And I mean, Shane Doan, we're very familiar with Shane Doan here in Winnipeg, of course. He was drafted 7th overall back in 1995. If I'm not mistaken, that year the Jets were supposed to host the entry draft. We'll have to check that.
But yeah, I think you're right.
I think that was the year.
And they got moved because they were getting moved.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Came into the league in 1995, 1996, and goes on to play 20 more years with the Arizona Coyotes franchise. I guess, Dave, let's just start off right now with Shane Doan's career and how you're going to remember Doan, because he's a guy that has had so much success both in the NHL and at the international level.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, he's the type of player who really, he is Arizona Coyotes hockey. He was the Phoenix Coyotes hockey when they were the Phoenix Coyotes, and he then became morphed into the Arizona Coyotes, and he was the captain. And he was the heart and soul and the face of that franchise. And, you know, people use that kind of a lot and loosely, I think, but there's no question when you think about the Coyotes, you think about Shane Doan. And the fact is that for my taste, I've always liked it when players stay with one franchise their entire career as opposed to maybe chasing it. Like, I understand why they do it. Believe me, I'm not maligning it. I simply think that it's just nice when you have a chance. Like, I think we talked about a couple weeks ago when we talked how Alfredson went from Ottawa. He was, you know, everybody thought Daniel Alfredson, Ottawa Senators, and then all of a sudden he played with the Detroit Red Wings. And it's almost like a little bit of a blip. You know, it's not a black mark on someone's career, but it's just, it's always like, don't you remember when he did that? And Shane Doan, you'll always remember him as the heart and soul of this franchise in Arizona. And, you know, obviously we Jets fans were, you know, those of us who were old enough to remember that season where he played, I think, 74 games or something like that as a rookie. He was, you know, a young, kind of exciting player. But I've never, the one thing about Shane Doan that I've always kind of taken into account is that you've never heard anybody say anything bad about him, whether it's publicly or privately. He always seems to be of really good character, and he's just one of those good people that are in the game. And again, that's another thing I think gets thrown around a little too loosely. Everybody's a good guy. He's a good guy. There's a lot of people who aren't good people. Shane Doan, I think that doesn't stand for. I think Shane Doan is the type of player who's just a stand-up guy. His teammates love him. His opponents seem to love him. The league seems to love him. I think that's kind of what that, and you saw it, actually, I think, in the reaction by the Arizona Coyotes fans when the team cut ties with him. And in the way and the manner in which they cut ties with Shane Doan, having been the captain, having been the face of this franchise for 21 years, or, you know, I guess the, you know, 20 years that they were with in Arizona. So I think that for you, that just kind of, to me, exemplified what kind of passion he can still inspire. Obviously, you know, he wasn't a huge force on the ice anymore, but still the fan base reacted saying, you know, you can't do this to a player who's shown nothing but loyalty to this organization.
And Dave, the talk has already started about whether or not Shane Doan is a Hall of Famer, and we're going to play up some comments from Nick Boynton in a second. He's the Coyotes radio analyst, also was a teammate of Shane Doan's. He was on Wednesday's Don Vito Roundtable, and he thinks he definitely thinks Shane Doan should be a Hall of Famer. But, you know, you mentioned Shane Doan's career, and, well, obviously we're talking about Shane Doan's career, and I was looking at some of his numbers, and I think some people will be surprised to know that he scored 20 goals 13 times. He scored 20 goals 9 straight years, and he scored 30 goals twice. He's just shy of 1,000 points. He's going to finish with 972 points in 1,540 games. But to me, Dave, it's what you touched on. Shane Doan as a person, as a leader, I mean, we obviously know he was the captain of the Coyotes for many years, though, but people forget Shane Doan was a tough hockey player. I mean, he had 100 penalty minutes one year, and he was a guy that routinely dropped the gloves and was a physical force out there. I want to play this clip of Nick Boynton on Wednesday's roundtable talking about Shane Doan's career?
He was a great captain, no doubt about it. He was a captain. I played with him for 2 years and obviously worked with the Coyotes for the last 3 years. But he's just, you know, the reason the game's in Arizona, the reason the game's sort of thriving in the Southwest, you know, California stuff, it's guys like Shane. Obviously, Wayne Gretzky going to L.A., but I've heard Austin Matthews talk about what Shane Doan, you know, meant to him growing up. And, you know, Shane should go in the Hall of Fame in the Builders category right away, if you're asking me.
Well, pretty impressive words from Nick Boynton, Dave, talking about Shane Doan going in the Builders category, not as a player. And you know very well, Dave, I mean, the struggles the Coyotes have had in Arizona. But when you look at a player like Austin Matthews and the youth hockey programs that now exist in the state of Arizona, Shane Doan has a lot to do with that, doesn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's one of those things that you can't measure the impact after a year or two in a place like Arizona. I mean, you have one of the best players in the game who's currently playing in Toronto, and it's largely a result of him going to Coyotes games as a child. So, I mean, you know, that's a big statement, and I'm not saying Shane Doan's solely responsible for that, but he definitely contributed, especially later on when there was a lot of talk about Coyotes leaving, and he really was a guy who, and you know, it's funny actually, because he got maligned, and you know, we saw it here in Winnipeg, because you know, as you well know, we used to do drama in the desert before the Jets were moving back to Winnipeg from Atlanta.
There's still drama in the desert.
There's still drama, but it's we're less concerned about it. And the reason we were focused on it, and that's kind of what kind of restarted the website, was the fact that there was so much talk about the Coyotes coming to Winnipeg, and you know, and then Doan was asked about it, and people were mad because he didn't want to move. And it's like, the guy has spent his entire life, with the exception of 1 year, in Arizona. I understand why he set down roots. His family's from, you know, is now there. They're based there. The kids go to school there. It's not easy just to just pick up and leave. And I think his comments were taken out of context and people took them the wrong way. So I don't have a problem with that. I mean, he's won, I think, 2 golds, 3 silvers at the world championship level. He's been good on the international stage, 4-team Canada.
Gold at the World Cup of Hockey.
Yeah, gold at the World Cup of Hockey. Unfortunately, finished 4th, I think, in the Olympic year when he went with Team Canada. But overall, I mean, he's just been he's a good soldier. He's one of those guys. Do I think he's a Hall of Famer? Probably not, in my opinion. But I think he's extremely solid. I think he's like one of those players that you loved having him in the room. I mean, if you ask me what's my most memorable Shane Doan moment, I'd probably say when he was on Man Tracker, which is a show where you basically are, it's a Canadian show, and they basically are like let loose somewhere in the wilds, and essentially him and his brother had to like escape as they prey on this TV show. It was hilarious. But I think he's one of those character guys. I think everyone loved him. So do I think he's a Hall of Famer? I wouldn't go that far, but I think he's, you know, I think the Coyotes will retire his jersey probably immediately, and I think they'll also say have him in the front office in some capacity.
I'm biased here because I've always been a big Doan guy. I do think he should be in the Hall of Fame, and that's obviously up to the Hall of Fame committee.
We're not on that committee.
No, we're not. It's up to them to determine if he is a Hall of Famer, but nobody is going to argue that he had an unbelievable career. And to your point, Dave, I think the main point about Shane Doan is he was a stabilizing force. He has been a member of the Coyotes since they moved to Arizona in 1996, and he's been there. So it's going to be weird to watch the Coyotes play without Shane Doan being there, but nobody can take away the fact that he has had an unbelievable career. I mean, just a couple of years ago, he had 28 goals. To be a 39-year-old in the NHL and to score 28 goals is really impressive. So I think he probably could have played 1 or 2 more years, but he's going out on top. He's had a heck of a career, and everybody here at Illegal Curve salute Shane Doan because he's a class act. He played hockey the right way. And you know, it's a sad day because it's going to be weird to watch an NHL without Shane Doan.
One thing that stands out to me, agreed, well said, Ezzy, is you want to talk about a guy who's pound for pound, solid farm boy strong. That was Shane Doan.
Someone sounds like he has a calendar.
A guy, he has a ranch. He lives on a ranch. A guy that, you know, he exemplified like strength and just that toughness. I will never forget the sound it made. One time, the Coyotes were in town. We were at the game. And Mark Scheifele took a hit from him along the wall. The sound it made along the glass. We've seen Scheifele fall down a bunch. I'm surprised he got up after that one. That was, one of the strongest guys in the NHL by far.
And Sean, Shane Doan might be one of the nicest guys off of the ice, but you know, people forget that he's 225 pounds.
Yeah.
And on the ice, if you upset him, I mean, he's not a guy that you want to upset. He'll drop the gloves. He'll lay a big hit. He's tough as nails. So I think that's something that, you know, has to be mentioned when you're talking about Shane Doan. He's kind of a throwback to, you know, maybe the Wendell Clark type of hockey player, right? He's a guy that can score 25, 30 goals in a year, but he's also a guy that can mix it up with the best of them. Guys, we're going to go to break right now. We've got a hold of Ken Danico. So when we come back, we're going to be joined by Ken Danico. He knows something about playing tough hockey as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on the home of the Jets, TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Bell Acres Golf and Country Club, official golf course of Illegal Curve Hockey. Bell Acres offers an 18-hole championship golf course that golfers of all levels can enjoy. This long weekend, Bell Acres has a Labor Day weekend special going. Golf anytime after 12 p.m. today, Sunday, or Monday for only $44 plus tax. That includes a golf cart. For more information or to book a tee time today, visit bellacres.com. Let's head to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're pleased to be joined by New Jersey Devils color analyst Ken Danico. Ken, thanks very much for joining us this morning.
Oh, always a pleasure. How are you doing today?
We're doing really well. Doing very well. It's the last long weekend of the summer, so we're hoping to soak up as many rays as we can.
Yeah, it's even a little chilly in New Jersey here today, so that tells me hockey season is upon us for sure. But, it's right around the corner. I know players, especially teams that didn't make the playoffs, like the Devils, like the Jets, you're always chomping at the bit and can't wait to get back on the ice and get training camp going.
Ken, we wanted to start off by asking you about Will Butcher. He's the reigning Hobey Baker Award winner. He signed with the Devils last week. Why do you think he chose the New Jersey Devils, and do you think he's going to be able to step right into the lineup this year?
Well, he's certainly going to get the great opportunities. A lot of people in the procrastinators and the media know the Devils aren't real deep on defense, although they feel it's a much better core than a lot of people do. But I think Will Butcher is a guy that, look, he's a Hobey Baker winner. Time will tell. He hasn't played a game in the National Hockey League, but he's a puck mover, intelligent guy, it seems. And you always see defenses sometimes late bloomers, only a fifth rounder a few years ago to Colorado. But all indications, he's got the hockey IQ, a terrific puck mover, and that's something the New Jersey Devils and a lot of teams certainly could use. He was well sought after, and I think he chose the Devils because the opportunity he's going to get. He had a great conversation with John Hines, the coach, and felt this was the best fit for him, and I think it shows a lot, and it's a good thing for the organization, the fact that he chose New Jersey over a lot of teams, a lot of other teams that probably are in a better position as far as where they're at right now. But he felt there's a lot of upside here in New Jersey, a lot of good young players, and it's good to see that Will Butcher chose the Devils from an organizational standpoint. Great job by Ray Shiro and a selling point to Will Butcher and his camp.
Ken, you know, Winnipeg Bay show, we couldn't get away without starting off, or my perspective, starting off with Winnipegger Travis Zajac, and obviously he's going to be out for 4 to 6 months potentially with that injury. How do you see the Devils adjusting to the loss of such an important player?
Well, first off, it's devastating from a couple of standpoints for Travis Zajac, and exactly what I opened up with, the fact that you don't make the playoffs, you haven't in the last few years, you can't wait to be part of the solution and the answer. Travis Zajac, that veteran leader that is so important in so many ways to the Devils. So yes, it certainly hurts, and I feel for Travis because I know the dedication and preparation he puts in the offseason to get ready for September. But all you have to do is bide time now, and Travis will be back eventually, and it'll make the club stronger come January when he does return. It's just one of those freak things out of your control. So there's nothing you can do, but it gives the young guys an opportunity, a quicker opportunity that we're getting a chance anyway. the Mikey McLeods, their first rounder from 2 years ago, certainly Nico Hischier, the number one overall pick. These guys are going to get a better opportunity to step up right now and have a big role and impact. Pavel Zacha showed signs. He's got to be consistent and take that next step. He's prepared all summer, trained all year summer here in New Jersey. So these guys, there's a lot of centermen in Jersey. That's an area where they do have some depth. It's young and unproven a little bit, but all very high talented guys that are going to get a chance. And it's exciting from the Devils' standpoint, the fact that these kids, they think they're ready. Blake Spears as well, another youngster from the Ontario Hockey League. And you don't replace Travis Ajak, but you certainly have some young guys that are going to have to step up, and they're going to get their opportunity to prove they can play in the National Hockey League and be an everyday player.
Ken, another move that the Devils made last week was signing former Winnipeg Jet Drew Stafford. Do you think this move was made to bring in a veteran who can work with some of those younger forwards that you just mentioned?
Well, I think so, and if there's an area they had less depth, that was the right side. And Drew Stafford's had success in the National Hockey League. It's a low-risk move, a one-year deal, I think, for, what, $700,000-$800,000 in that range. The fact that, let's see if Drew Stafford, he's going to be motivated and see if he can be a guy. They want him to produce some offense, produce some goals, whether it's on the power play, whether, you know, in a third-line role, whatever it may be, if he can get back to being the guy that has that offensive ability, and he showed some signs last year as well in Boston. And yes, the veteran presence with the Devils looking like they're going to have a lot of young guys. John Quenneville, I didn't include in that group, the Brandon Manitoba or the Brandon Wheat King native, or last where he played in junior and in the AHL and had got his feet wet. All these guys are going to get the chance, and you certainly need to surround them with some good veterans. They're hoping Drew Stafford can be one of those guys.
Ken, last season the Devils scored the fewest goals in the East and were tied with the Wings for the most goals against. Which area do you anticipate them being able to clean up in the upcoming campaign?
Well, I think both. I mean, the year before, they were one of the better defensive clubs, considering they were not a playoff team. And a lot of that had to do with Corey Schneider. Corey had an off year for him, for sure. A lot of that goes hand-in-hand with the team trying to find the balance between puck possession and joining the attack. I think they did the defenseman as well, and I think they got caught at times in between and developing a system and where they can be more of an offensive style attack team like the way the National Hockey League has gone. So I think they got caught in between a little bit. But the bottom line is your goaltending has to, you know that, in Winnipeg has to be consistent. Corey will be the first to tell you it wasn't his best year. He's one of the elite goaltenders. I expect him to have a huge bounce back year. So I think they can improve in both areas from a standpoint. Certainly, hopefully these young guys like Nico Hischier, McLeod can step up and be factors right away, like the Toronto Maple Leafs youngsters were. Pavel Zacha is going to be better. I think Taylor Hall could have a monster year after he got acclimated and over the shock of a trade. So I would think they need to step up in both areas. And if they're going to be an improved hockey team, they're going to need to. And if they're going to want to be a surprise team to push for the playoffs, those are all areas. Certainly they have to improve on both those. But Corey Schneider is a key to the defensive part of it. That's one aspect, and I expect him to have a big year.
We're joined by three-time Stanley Cup champion and New Jersey Devils color analyst on MSG Plus, Ken Danico, on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline. Ken, earlier we were talking about Damon Severson. He's still unsigned. Are you expecting that to get done soon? And how did you see his game grow last year? I know we've talked to you before about Damon Severson, and you know he had a career year last year.
He did, but he's still inconsistent, and he knows that. He's a guy that I'm a big fan of, Damon Severson. I think he's got a huge upside and potential to be a top four guy, certainly even a top three, top pairing defenseman in this league, but he has to show consistency. And at times, that he was up and down, and when he's assertive, he's got the capabilities. He's a terrific skater, puck mover, great hockey sense and mind. I think he can bring a lot more offense. A lot of that has to do with what you talked about. The Devils didn't score a whole lot last year, but Damon's got to be part of that answer, and I think he can be from the back end. I know he had, led the D in points from the back end, but that's not shouldn't be satisfying for him because he's a guy and he's not because he knows his capabilities. I think Damon Severson can be a 50-point guy in this league and a good, sound defensive player, moving the puck in a maybe even elite guy for the New Jersey Devils. But it's, again, young defensemen developing, finding their way, and being consistent on a nightly basis. So I expect big things this year from Damon. He will get signed. I hear grumblings. They're working their way toward a long-term deal, and that's always, the business side of it. But they know the importance of Damon Severson. He's a guy that they are going to count on heavily moving forward. He's still a youngster, but probably from my standpoint, the best all-around defenseman on the team when he's playing the way he's capable of.
Ken, I wanted to ask you about another young defenseman, and that's Steven Santini. He was drafted in the second round 4 years ago. He went 42nd overall. Do you think this is the year that he's going to be able to play a full-time role with the Devils?
Well, he's certainly going to be one of those guys that's going to vie for that position. Look, Steve Santini is a guy, he is dedicated. He's a very serious guy for a young age. They always talk about Jonathan Toews, and I'm not saying he's in that mold, but he's one of those guys, when you talk to him, he's such a dedicated, motivated young athlete, and he wants to do well. Is he going to be a top-pairing defenseman in this league? From my perspective, probably not. Can he be a solid defensive guy that can play physical, move the puck, play a good sound game in your end, chip in a little bit offensively at times? Yes, and those guys are invaluable, and that's what Steven Santini has to provide. And if he's going to be an everyday player this year, he's going to have to provide that kind of consistency and have a good training camp, certainly. But like I said, I don't think he's got the day. If you're asking me, he doesn't have Damon Severson potential. He doesn't have that kind of abilities, but he's just a good, sound, physical defenseman, and he's certainly going to be vying for an everyday spot this training camp.
Ken, you know, since the mid-90s, the Devils were a perennial playoff team, and it seemed every year they were in it, and I think they only missed it one time in 14 of the 15 seasons. And then in the last seven, they've only made it once, although it was, of course, a Stanley Cup appearance. How much pressure is there from the fan base for this team to win next season, or is there an understanding that they're still a developing group and there may be a little bit of leeway in that regard?
You know what? Patience has been preached here, and I looked a little... You know, an article that said the Devils' youngsters, their development, their system is, you know, in the top five or six now as far as prospects along the way. And that's been a huge jump, whereas a couple of years ago before Ray and his staff came, the prospects were near the bottom as far as the depth and organizational depth with youngsters. So that's the step in the right direction for sure. I think you still have to show patience. Look, I'm a believer. I don't look at where predictions are. I think it's ridiculous. I get a kick out of it. I know it's all part of our jobs in the media, but sometimes they pick teams to be 28th or last in the division. They make the playoffs. So usually every single year we see that. So you always got to believe you have an opportunity. Anybody think the Toronto Maple Leafs were going to make the leap that they did, regardless of having a generational player, Austin Matthews? I don't think anybody expected all those youngsters to carry them. So that's what you have to believe. You hope for that, but you always have to be realistic. I understand that, and the fact that it may take another year or two, but I think Ray's done a terrific job in replenishing the farm system, the team, the youngsters, and he's drafted very well lately, and that's the direction they have to go. And then when they have a lot of cap space, when it's time and place to sign a big free agent or add pieces that you need to be that playoff contender and a Stanley Cup contender, I think they will do that. But right now, you go into training camp like you have an opportunity, for sure, to make the playoffs and keep everything in balance as well. And understand you do have to be patient along the way. But I expect them to be better than last year, no question about it.
Ken Danico is the New Jersey Devils color analyst for MSG+. He's a three-time Stanley Cup champion, and his number three hangs in the rafters at Prudential Center. No one else is going to ever wear number three for the Devils, and he joins us regularly on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ken, thanks so much for joining us this morning, and we look forward to talking to you once the season gets going.
You got it, guys. Always a pleasure. Look forward to training camp and talking to you guys again down the road.
Thanks a lot, Ken. Have a great weekend.
All right, fellas. Take care.
All right, let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Arizona Coyotes color analyst Tyson Nash. We're going to talk about Shane Doan's career a little bit more. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on the home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's the tremendous trio myself, Dave Manuk, and Sean Assor. Drew Mandel is off this week.
Sean's doing double duty. He's chiming in on the mic, and he's producing.
Yeah, he's producing, he's operating, and he's also giving us that analysis that we're used to from the one that's known as Seanosaurus Rex. This segment of the show is brought to you by Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all of your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Dave, we should also mention, we've got Tyson Nash coming up right now. Last segment of the show, we're actually going to be joined by Aaron Bernstein of Bernstein's Deli, and he's actually going to bring in a couple of burgers to try. They're Le Burger Week burgers. It's known as the Oy Vey Whataburger. This thing is unbelievable. I'm not going to mention anything else. I had one yesterday. We're going to have another one here in a second, but that's going to be coming up in 15 minutes. Right now, we're joined by Tyson Nash. Let's go to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Tyson Nash, Arizona Coyotes color analyst. Thanks so much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Oh, happy to be with you guys. Thanks for having me.
And Tyson, I hear that you're in Cabo right now.
I am. We're a little bit stranded. We're trying to make it to the airport for the first time in 3 days. Not a bad place to be stranded, but would love to get home.
Yeah, with training camp coming up in less than 2 weeks, I guess you're already getting back into hockey mode here on the second day of September.
Yeah, it's always nice to see September roll around, and you know, when September hits, that tells me hockey is just around the corner. So, lots of big moves in Arizona this year with John Chyka, the coaching change, some real big signings for the Coyotes with Raanta, number one goaltender. We also brought in a number one centerman in Stepan. So things are really looking up in Arizona for sure.
Tyson, we want to talk to you about some of the moves that the Coyotes made during the offseason, but we brought you on mainly to talk about Shane Doan. Obviously, the big news in the hockey world this week was that Shane Doan announced his retirement. You played with Shane Doan for a couple years, and then you've obviously covered the Coyotes for many more. Let's just start off with, what will Shane Doan's legacy be in the state of Arizona?
Well, I think just, loyal. Consistent. You don't play 21 years in the NHL without being consistently good each and every year. And you don't stay with one franchise for 21 years without being a great human being, a great leader. And he's going to be missed. There's some big shoes to fill, no question about it. But, it's sad to see, no matter how much you prepare. It was just a matter of time before he was going to be retiring. But to not see him take the ice this year for the first time in a long time is going to be tough to watch.
You know, Tyson, it's fresh, obviously, with the retirement news, but do you see Shane Doan taking on a management role with the Coyotes?
You know what? I really don't know. I haven't talked to Shane, personally about, what he wants to do now. I think the big thing for Shane is he just wants to enjoy his family, his kids. He's been, obviously dedicated to, preparing for the hockey season and the grueling year that, that the NHL is all about. So you miss a lot of time with your family. And he's a family guy. He's going to be, enjoying his kids and their sports and all the things that he hasn't been able to do for so long. So I hope he really enjoys himself. But, on the other side of it, me being with the Coyotes, I sure hope he's a part of the organization in the future and hopefully sooner than later.
Now, Tyson, as we mentioned, you played alongside Shane Doan, and you've covered the Coyotes for many years as a color analyst. What makes him such a great leader? Because we know that he is an awesome leader, but what specifically, being around the Coyotes for so many years, what is it about him that makes him one of the best leaders maybe that we've ever seen?
Well, Shane Doan is, obviously a real good friend of mine. We've known each other since we were 10 years old, and we go back a long way, and what makes Shane is that he's a leader by example. He's not a guy that talks a ton in the locker room. But he also knows that if you're struggling and you're trying to find your way, he'll be the first guy to come over and put his arm around you and figure out, you know, what's going on, how he can motivate you, how you can get back on track. And, you know, he manages the locker room perfectly. And then a great leader isn't a leader without leading by example. And that's the biggest thing with Shane is he leads by example off the ice, with the fans and the community, you know, how he has grown the game because he is so available to the people. I mean, he'll sit there and talk to a random fan for 10, 15 minutes while his family's sitting there, you know, waiting for him at dinner. I mean, the guy just he just gets it. He's a wonderful human being. And, but the big thing for him is he always led by example. He was a force out there. And when you see your captain and your best player going out and doing all the little things, that makes you accountable as a player no matter what your role is.
You know, Tyson, he may be hanging up his NHL skates, but of course with the Olympics and no NHLers going to the Olympics, do you think that we may see Shane Doan playing with the Team Canada jersey next year in South Korea?
Well, I know he had talked about that a little bit. I know that was definitely something that was, you know, on his mind. I believe Sean Burke reached out to him to see where he was at. I'm guessing, though, and this is only a guess, that the fact that he announced his retirement would basically tell me that he's probably hanging up his skates. I don't know that for sure, so I'm kind of reaching on that comment, but I would love to see it. I mean, I never get sick of watching Shane Doan play this game, that's for sure.
We're joined by Tyson Nash on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline talking about Shane Doan's career. Tyson, you mentioned that you and Shane Doan go way back. You guys won back-to-back Memorial Cups with the Kamloops Blazers in the early 90s. When you look back at Shane Doan's career, including the 21 years, obviously, in the NHL, what are some of the highlights? When I think of Shane Doan, obviously, I think of winning the World Cup of Hockey, scoring that winning goal in 2004. Also, taking the Coyotes to the 2012 Stanley Cup Western Conference Finals against the LA Kings. Obviously, the Kings won the Cup that year. But for you, what stands out, obviously, amongst you know, a plethora of great moments in his career?
Well, I mean, there's so many, for sure. And, you know, I think that, you know, winning championships never gets old. And, you know, the fact that we won two Memorial Cups together was real special, I know, for him and for me, you know, as well, just because those teams, you're galvanized when you win a trophy like that of that magnitude forever. And that has kept that group tight. Every year we all get together at some point and just have a ton of laughs. But as far as the rest of his career goes, I think he is most proud, and he would tell you he's most proud of playing 21 years with one organization. That is so difficult, as I mentioned, to do. That, you know, sometimes in this league you get, you know, chewed up and spit out, because ultimately you're a piece of meat, you know, in some form. Once you get tired and once you wear out your welcome, you know, it's time to move on. And that just is a credit to Shane Doan that, you know, they've never wanted to move on from him, because he's been such a great player and, you know, such a producer for so long. And it's about consistency, and that is tough to do. He's 41 years old. He was still getting it done. I mean, 2 years ago, he had 28 goals. I mean, that's ridiculous.
You know, Tyson, you're a guy who has your finger on the pulse of this team probably as much as anybody in Arizona. So who do you see, as we're transitioning from Shane Doan to the next leader in that room, who do you see wearing the C for the Arizona Coyotes?
Well, it's going to be Oliver Ekman-Larsson, for obvious reasons. He's one of the best defensemen in the National Hockey League, in my mind. Definitely a top fiver. You know, this guy's quiet, but he's going to be another one of those guys that leads by example, much like a Carlson there in Ottawa. You know, he's got the respect of his teammates just because of the player that he is. And I think he's going to be one of those guys that's not going to, you know, pump everyone up in the locker room with some big speech, but he's going to go out there and, you know, I guess motivate guys by his efforts and what he does on the ice. And that's, again, like I said, the best type of leader. There's leaders that sometimes talk the talk, but, you know, aren't always able to go out there and get it done. And Oliver's, I'm anxious to see what he's capable of doing, because I think with Shane Doan in the locker room, no one else really stepped up, because they all just looked towards him. Well, now it's going to be a real group effort with Oliver leading the way. Max Domi up front is going to be a real leader for this Coyotes team. So good, so talented, you know, so he's going to have to step up as well.
Tyson Nash, Arizona Coyotes color analyst, joins us now live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline. Tyson, your buddy Nick Boynton was on the Don Vito roundtable on Wednesday, and he said that he thinks Shane Doan should go into the Hockey Hall of Fame as a builder. Do you agree with him? And I know it's a tough question, but do you think he is a Hall of Famer?
Well, you know, I definitely do. I think the big thing with me when I get to ask that question, and I get asked that question a lot, I think that his numbers probably don't add up to Hall of Famer numbers, but he is a Hall of Fame person. And I think that's the most important thing, you know, in this world. And yeah, I mean, I've heard there is talk that he's been thrown in the builder category. I mean, I'm not sure that the Arizona Coyotes are here today without Shane Doan sticking around. He could have went elsewhere for more money, but he didn't. He chose to stick around with Arizona. And if he was going to win, it was going to be with the Coyotes.
Tyson, what are you expecting from the Coyotes next season? I mean, they've made a lot of additions. There's a lot of excitement now around the team. They've developed a lot of young prospects. And you talked about Max Domi. We're expecting probably a big, you know, third year from him. So what is your anticipation for the upcoming season for the Arizona Coyotes?
Well, I'm really excited for a number of reasons. You know, the addition to Raanta, I mean, you need a number one goaltender. Mike Smith, as good as he was at moments, he was just never able to stay healthy. And when you have a young team, you need a rock, and your rock has got to be your goaltender. And Mike Smith just was not that the last four seasons. You know, a number one center, in order to have success, you need a solid number one center to run your power play, to be the go-to guy, and the Coyotes get that and step on. So he's going to put up big numbers. He's going to get 20 goals. You got to think increased responsibility that he probably never had in New York as far as the power play goes and other situations. So I'm also excited about Jarmelson. I mean, this is a guy that brings three Stanley Cups to this Coyotes roster. You can't have enough winners and champions on your team, and he knows how to win. He's going to help Oliver Ekman-Larsson being that stable force back on the blue line. And obviously Rick Tocchet. Dave Tippett was a real smart hockey guy. I learned so much from him in my time with the Coyotes under Dave Tippett. But Rick Tocchet now brings another element that he looks at this roster and he wants to see these guys just go. He's going to wind them up and let these youngsters go. It's about speed and skill in today's game. And Rick Tocchet is going to let these guys play. And he also brings three Stanley Cups, one as a player, two as a coach, a guy that knows how to win. And that adds up to an exciting team to me.
The Winnipeg Jets have a home-and-home with the Arizona Coyotes Saturday, November 11th, after they're in Vegas. And then on Tuesday, November 14th, the Arizona Coyotes are in town. So we expect to see you at Earls, Maine in a couple of months, Tyson.
I love it. You can count on it. I'll be like Norm from Cheers. I'll be there.
Thanks so much for coming on this morning, and we look forward to talking to you once the season gets going. Have a great weekend.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. That's Tyson Nash, Arizona Coyotes color analyst. We're going to head to break now. When we come back, Aaron Bernstein from Bernstein's Deli is in studio. We're going to talk about Bernstein's Deli's Le Burger Week entry, and we're going to actually eat some burgers live in studio. I think Sean Asor has actually already started to eat one.
Yeah,
I didn't have time.
It's delicious.
So I guess I'm going to eat a burger by myself maybe coming up. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Are you going to go my way? Are you going to eat my burger? Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. I'm Ezra Ginsberg, joined by Dave Manuk and Sean Asor. And now, pleased to be joined by Aaron Bernstein of Bernstein's Deli. I should also mention, Aaron, this segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ez. Yeah, great to be here. I think it's been a year since I was here last.
Yeah, we have you on every year, of course, around this time to talk about LeBurger Week. It started yesterday. Mm-hmm. I was at the deli yesterday. I've already tried the burger, so I believe that's the first time that Sean has tried the burger, but this is actually going to be my second burger. So, Aaron, without further ado, I'm going to take a bite because I'm really hungry. I haven't eaten anything this morning, so I'm going to start to eat this burger, my second burger, as I mentioned. And as I'm eating, can you just tell us about this year's entry for Bernstein's Deli for LeBurger Week?
Sure. Before I do that, though, the Legal Curve sandwich, as your loyal fans know, is on our secret menu at the moment. It's not actually published anywhere, but with the jet season starting up, we'll be reintroducing it in October. So yeah, Ezra's biting into our burger here, a little play-by-play action. The Oy Vey Whataburger, that name was created by an employee of ours, Lauren. We had a contest to name it. It's so big. When you see it, you'll say Oy Vey. So we start off with two beef patties. They're each a quarter pound, made with organic grass-fed beef from Howe Park Farms, a local organic cattle producer. And with that, there's some other things made in Manitoba. There's Bothwell Extra Old Cheddar. There's pickles from Elman's. Corned beef we make in-house. The bun is from Gunn's Bakery. It's got a nice caffeinated maple bacon jam on the bottom. Gives it some sweetness, some punch. What else is in there? Coleslaw with apples, jalapeno, and roasted garlic aioli.
Let me tell you, Aaron, it's a good thing that there's that many ingredients. Sorry.
Because you're still chewing.
I'm still taking a few bites here. It's a
this
good thing.
Insane.
It's insane. And we got Shaunosaurus Rex also eating the burger right now. It's a good thing I was going to say that there are that many ingredients because it took me that long to eat like a quarter of the burger. And I got to say, because this is the fourth year that Bernstein's Deli has been part of LeBurger Week. And for me, ringing the bell, it's over. This is the best burger I think that you guys have ever put out. And you guys have put out a good burger every single year. But, you know, you mentioned some of the ingredients. And for me, what really stands out is the spice and the fact that this year's burger has two patties. And really, it's just really a flavor explosion. This is unbelievable. I don't even really want to keep talking right now. I want to finish the burger.
Sure, I could talk about it a bit more, I guess. So the beef choice is really important to us. As you know, you're a close friend of mine. I don't really eat much beef. So I thought it was important to go with something at least grass-fed. We ended up going with an organic option. We tried beef from about eight different local producers. They were all excellent. But we felt that this organic meat from Howe Park Farms really had just like a great flavor to it. We couldn't really describe what the difference is, but we thought it was superior to what else we were tasting.
It's unbelievable too, Aaron, because, you know, you mentioned, you know, the grass-fed organic beef, the two patties, which is obviously, you know, the centerpiece of the burger. But there's so much going on in this burger. I got to tell you, you know, if you're looking for somewhere to go for lunch today, head to Bernstein's Deli because there's just so much happening in this burger. You know, you mentioned you obviously taste the pickled jalapeno and you taste the Elman's pickles and the crispy onions. But then that garlic aioli really shines. And then you've got that jam of bacon, apple, onion, maple syrup, and coffee. It's like just like the convergence of all of these unbelievable ingredients. I told you this yesterday. I think I'm going to hit double digits as far as the amount of burgers I'm going to eat this week because I think what you've created here, Aaron, is a masterpiece.
No, thanks so much. Yeah, well, credit goes out to our whole team. It was a very collaborative, iterative process. We have a couple of good, very good leaders in the kitchen, and Crystal and Sandy, and them along with myself. We, you know, kept tweaking it. Had an idea. We should do two patties. They'll cook faster than one massive patty, so we can pump out the burgers because obviously hungry burger eaters want to go to multiple restaurants in one day. We want to make sure we can get them through the store. And then we just kept going and riffing on it. You know, let's put our coleslaw in it. Well, we did that last year. We should add some apples. It has a nice counter flavor to the jam.
You just mentioned the jam, and I just took a couple more bites. This is unbelievable. Like, I want to put this on my toast right now.
This might become the first product that we actually start jarring and selling in farmers markets. Ooh. We'll see.
Shawnee, chime in here. I know that you've been eating during this whole segment.
No, I mean, it really is an absolutely delicious burger, Aaron. You got, for me, it's all about the crispy onions and then the sweet jam, and then you got those pickled jalapenos, which I'm an absolute freak for. So it's wonderful. I got a question. You know, last year you guys did the chicken burger. 2 years ago, it was the breakfast burger.
It was turkey 2 years ago.
Turkey, and the first one was
3 years ago.
Right,
yeah.
Okay, right. So how do you, you know, what's the biggest challenge in keeping these things original? There's so many entries, and there's so many, you know, different types of varieties of burgers all over the city, and then you guys keep pumping out original ones. How challenging is it to keep the flavors and the combos original?
Well, I guess we're running out of animals, so we've been different every year so far. This is, I guess, similar with beef and pork to the first year, but instead of breakfast, more of a lunch or dinner type of burger. You know, it's just the team. We had our chef, Beth, who is now a stay-at-home mom with her twins. She was with us the first 3 years, and we've had the same other cooks and Crystal and Sandy in the kitchen with us the whole way. And so, you know, just between all of us, we come up with an idea, we talk about it, try things out. But yeah, I don't know. It's just, you know, we start thinking about this about 3 months before. So we have plenty of time to go back and forth and iron out all the details.
Okay, I'm not joking around right now, Aaron. I realize that Bernstein's Deli is a sponsor of the radio show, but I'm not joking. Like, this is the best thing I've ever eaten. And I realize that I say that every single year, but it really applies this year. Like, if you're driving in your car right now and you're listening to the show, first off, you know, make sure it's not too loud, but go to Bernstein's Deli right now if you're hungry and try this burger. And if you're not completely satisfied, I will give you your money back.
Whoa.
Dave. Tweet at ICSEG. No one will be, though.
It's just so, it's so delicious, I have to say. We talked about all the ingredients, and I mean, I've already eaten half of the burger here, Aaron, as you can see. But, I mean, I'm going to finish the other half of the burger when the show is over here. But kudos to you, and it's being received very well here in the first couple of days of La Burger Week.
Yeah, well, yesterday was the first day. I just want to say one more thing about the beef, because we are aware that there's over 100 restaurants participating this year. People want to get out to lots of places. So even though there's a half pound of beef, when you eat the organic grass-fed beef, it doesn't stay in your system and weigh you down. You're not going to be wanting to take a nap after you eat this. You're going to be ready to go to the next restaurant and try the next burger. So, you know, we're really encouraging people to get around the city, try lots of places, of course try us, and it's just a really fun week. And yeah, like, we sold about 50 more burgers than we thought we would yesterday. So we're just, as every year, scrambling to keep up.
Well, Aaron, I know you're super busy this weekend and next week, so we really appreciate you taking some time to come on the show this morning and obviously bring us a couple of these Oy Vey Whataburgers. They're unbelievable. I know that Sean was starving during the show before you came, so, you know, thank you for feeding Sean and myself, and, you know, best of luck for the rest of the week. And as I said before, I mean, you guys have absolutely nailed this burger. It's absolutely delicious. I've talked to a lot of people that have already eaten it in the first day of La Burger Week. So, again, you know, best of luck for the rest of the weekend and the week. And thanks again for coming on today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, guys. It's always great to come down to studio, see how things are done here. And, yeah, like I said, just...
It's where all the magic happens.
It's a fun week. We're just excited. Keep going with it. It goes until Thursday the 7th. So we're open until 9:30 every night, including the holiday Monday. So, you know, come on down when it works out for you, and we'll be there.
And that's going to do it for us, guys. That's the show. It's 2 hours is over right now. We want to thank our guest today. Colton Orr joined us during the first hour to talk about Goon, Last of the Enforcers. We were joined by Ken Danico talking about the New Jersey Devils. And we were also joined by Arizona Coyotes color analyst Tyson Nash talking about the career of Shane Doan, who announced his retirement this week. We also want to give a shout out to all of our sponsors: Keener Jerseys, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bell Acres Golf and Country Club, Zappia Group Realty, and of course Bernstein's Deli. You just heard from Aaron Bernstein. Go to Bernstein's Deli right now and try their La Burger Week entry. We'll be back next week. Drew Mandel should be back. He's busy being a responsible father. For Dave Manuk, for Sean Asore, I'm Ezra Ginsberg. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Have a good long weekend.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.